You're about to hear an inspiring message from the team at C3 Church Bathurst. It's our prayer that it will spur you to live your best life in Him.
We're talking about the context of love. I don't know if you've noticed, but we're preaching on love this month in order to help us to articulate that to our family and friends. So love is a great little word, L-O-V-E. And last week, Ro, great message on life. If you've missed that, it's on podcast on iTunes. L for life. Today's O for an overcoming attitude. V and E, well, you'll get that next week and the week after. But, you know, having a really simple thing in your mind, L-O-V-E, so that when somebody talks to you, well, why do you go to church? You go, because good music, good coffee, you know, just sense of why do I do that? But if you could really clearly just say, hey, God's given me life in all of its fullness, or God's really helped me overcome some problems in my life, then as a genuine, heartfelt, normal expression of why am I going to church? And so that's what this month is all about. So if you can get in your mind, L-O-V-E, so you don't forget, that's easy, isn't it? God's a God of love. He gives me life. He helps me overcome my problems and other things. If you really want to find out, it's on the cards for the month. But see, that would just so equip us. And that's why for just 2 weeks, in 2 weeks' time, we've got our What's It All About night. It's called an information night so that you can invite your friends who would go to an information night. They may not come to a church service. They may not come to a Holy Spirit, Holy Ghost activity night. You know, they may not come to some of the things that you and I get excited about, but they might come to an information night. And they say, just come along. Here's a little card. Come along. I'll pick you up. It's good coffee, good food afterwards, but you'll hear what it's all about, why we do church. And you might be able to explain just in 30 seconds, hey, Jesus has really helped me overcome some problems in my life. Things like that. So that's what this month is all about. But let's go to 1 Samuel 13. Here we find an incredible story of some young men who rise up and face their obstacles. And the context is the first king of Israel. His name is Saul, King Saul. He's chosen as the first king by a prophet called Samuel. And Samuel anoints him as king, and they have an enemy. Everybody needs an enemy, right? They have an enemy called the Philistines. The Philistines live on the other side of the border, and it's a constant enemy. It's a constant struggle. You know, they take some land, and then they take some land, and then they fight, and they fight. So there's this constant warring part. And so that's the context of this passage. And Saul, in verse 1 of 1 Samuel 13, was 30 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 42 years. 42 years as the first king of Israel. And in verse 5, we pick up the story that the Philistines mustered a mighty army of 3,000 chariots, 6,000 charioteers, and as many warriors as the grains of sand on the seashore. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine your army, and you look over the border, over the river, and there are 3,000 warring chariots. We've got two on each, which means 6,000 charioteers. Maths is good. But they can't count the warriors on foot. It's like this sea. As many, it's like a beach. As many as the grains on the sand. And that's what they're facing. They're looking at this incredible army that are going to take their land, and they're massing on the borders, getting ready to storm over. The men of Israel saw that they were in a tight spot. Because they were hard-pressed by the enemy, they tried to hide in caves, thickets, rocks, holes, and cisterns. Some of them crossed the Jordan River and escaped into the land of Gad and Gilead. And meanwhile, Saul stayed at Gilgal, and his men were trembling with fear. What would you do if you looked over the border and you saw this incredible army massing? Would you hide in caves, thickets, holes, and cisterns? So afraid. They just They just wish they weren't there. And some of them just said, look, forget it. It's just too much. I'm gonna disappear. Saul and his men, see, even Saul, the mighty king, who's a head taller than everybody else, trembling with fear. Skip over to verse 15, we'll pick up the story. Samuel, who's the prophet, left Gilgal and went on his way, but the rest of the troops went with Saul to meet the army, and they went up from Gilgal to Gibeah in the land of Benjamin. And when Saul counted the men who were still with him, he found only 600 were left. Oops. Saul and Jonathan and the troops with them were staying at Geba in the land of Benjamin, and the Philistines set up their camp at Michmash. The pass at Michmash had meanwhile been secured by a contingent of the Philistine army. It is probably the worst possible scenario in a warring context. You've got a ravine that's been secured by the opposition, incredible army, and you just have 600 men who are not feeling that confident, by the way. They're trembling with fear. They've got this fear of obviously losing, but also not just their lives, but their whole country. How are you going to feel? What's the thing that's going on inside your heart? It's a big problem. Sometimes we have in our world wicked problems. You've had a wicked problem? Wicked problem, in IT speak, is a problem that you can't even articulate. The problem is so big that you can't even describe the problem. I reckon this is a wicked problem. That they wouldn't even know, what do we actually do? Do we run? Do we fight? They can't even describe the mess that they're in. And you know, it's ironic that our world has lots of problems. I mean, I would have thought we'd solved it by now. Well, we're pretty smart, aren't we, people? We've got lots of technology. We've got lots of things going for us, but we still have things called wicked problems. We still have things that we can't even define to solve, let alone to solve. And I'm not talking about, you know, most of us are well clothed and we eat and we have somewhere to live. I'm not talking about the survival problems. I'm talking about higher up problems, the pressures of life. You know, emotional fears, things that grab us when we shouldn't. The opportunities for fear are many, and it's like something that we don't know how to overcome. They face us and they block our path as we walk along. They could be inside of us. They could be in our friends and our families. They could just be the way life is right now. It could be the state of our bank balance. It could be the state of my mind. But there's a problem. There's a barrier. So when I'm trying to walk along with life, I feel like there's constant problems, constant things that I have to deal with. And isn't this true of life? And if it's true of our life here in the church, then what's it like for people who don't know Christ? I mean, how many people do you know who are facing big problems, perhaps wicked problems that they can't even define? You've got to know that there should be more to life than this. It's a catch cry, isn't it? But somehow there's a sense of there's a problem here, but I don't know what to do with it. I can't get on. I can't do this. I can't face school or my exams. And they loom larger. And the problem is that these problems get bigger than us. Bigger than they really are, and they start to overwhelm us. And it sneaks into our language. We go, how are you going? Yeah, all right. Getting by. That's what happens when the problems start to overwhelm you, isn't it? Oh, okay. Well, it could be better, but you know, we're just, you know, I don't know. You know, you have this conversation with people? Yeah, she'll be right, but can't wait for the end of the year. Can't wait for the weekend. Can't wait for the next holiday or the next thing. You know, people kind of wish their life away and hope for the... But these things are not going to go away. So the day-to-day survival and the problems that people face around us is the opposite of what Jesus said. He said, I've come to give you life. And life, not just life, but life in all of its fullness. Life in abundance, says John 10:10. Life. Like life so that there's so much life inside of me that it pours out. Jesus says, I'll give you life, rivers of living water that will overflow, that will pour out. That's the Christian life. so that when you meet somebody, there's this flow of life out of you. That people go, wow, I feel refreshed. I feel invigorated by meeting you. I feel like there's something that I'm being blessed by because out of my innermost being will flow rivers of living water. That's what he said. But so many people walk around as life takers and life suckers. And you meet people that just... But the Christian life is the opposite. We pour out and we give and we bless for other people. But unless we've got life inside of us, then the problems and the barriers that we come across, they crush us and they threaten us. I just believe it's our destiny not just to cope in life, but to overcome the problems in every part of our world. You know, in Revelation, Jesus talks to seven churches. And in each one of those churches, he says there are things to overcome. He says each of these churches are facing obstacles and barriers. You know, it's not just that we need a bigger building. That's a pretty minor thing. You know, that's a minor obstacle. We're talking about churches who are in really tough oppositional times. And each of these churches is facing something. And do you know what Jesus says to them? He says, he who overcomes, he who can step over the problem, he cannot not be tripped, but can move over. He will overcome. Listen to this, Revelation 2:7. To him who overcomes, I will grant to eat of the tree of life. 2:11, he who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death. 2:17, he who overcomes, to him I will give him some hidden manna. 2:26, he who overcomes and keeps my deeds until the end, I will give him authority and nations. He who overcomes, 2:3-5, must be clothed with white in garments. 3:12, he who overcomes, I'll make him a pillar in the temple of God. 3:21, he who overcomes, I will grant him to sit down with me on my throne. You see that Jesus wants his people to have an overcoming attitude, not to be thwarted and pushed down. But in order for us to be an overcoming people, guess what we need? Something to overcome. Does that make sense? I can't be an overcomer unless I've got something to overcome. It's illogical. You're not getting it. There are things in our world that God has put there. Sometimes it's not God, sometimes Satan, sometimes people, sometimes they're just there and we don't understand. But I'm telling you, Jesus doesn't say to come up to that thing and run away. He says, no. Face it, overcome it. He who overcomes, he who is not thwarted and pushed back and weighed down by the challenges of life, I'll give him all these things. It's challenging, isn't it? Because we're all facing things that we need to overcome. Things we often talk about, challenges of life. So the challenge is to overcome them, not to be overcome by the overcome things. Jonathan had an overcoming attitude. Jonathan is Saul's son in the scripture. Jonathan is a great young man. He's a bit of a hero in the Old Testament. In 1 Samuel 14, we continue the story. Remember the tight spot? How many chariots? 3,000. 6,000 charioteers and an army that you can't count. That is a thing to overcome. How many men have you got on your team? 600. That's a pretty big thing to overcome, isn't it? I love what Jonathan does next. One day, Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come on, let's go over to where the Philistines have their outposts. Let's overcome. Let's let out and make something happen. But Jonathan did not tell his father what he was doing. The king didn't know. Because meanwhile, Saul and his 600 men were camped on the outskirts of Gibeah around the pomegranate tree at Migron. I don't know why a pomegranate tree. Among Saul's men, Ahiah the priest, who was wearing the ephod, the priestly vest. Ahiah was the son of Ichabod's brother, Ahitub, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, the priest of the Lord, who had served the Shiloh. And no one realized that Jonathan had left the Israelite camp. He's even got the priests with him, God's anointed ones. So that's Saul and the priests and the rest of the army. But Jonathan grabs his mate, the armor bearer. And to reach the Philistine outpost, Jonathan had to go down between two rocky cliffs, big ravine. One was called Bozez and Senna. The cliff on the north was in front of Michmash, and the one on the south was in front of Geba. Let's go across to the outpost of these pagans. He says, let's take a stand. Perhaps the Lord will help us, for nothing can hinder the Lord. He can win a battle whether he has many warriors or only a few. What an awesome verse. God is not tied to how many people you've got in your army, how many people you've got in your team, what your bank balance is like, your intellect, your looks, your stage in life, your youth or your otherwise. He's not constrained by those things that we think are obstacles. And Jonathan gets this. And Jonathan causes faith to rise up. And his armor bearer goes, do whatever you think's best. I'm right with you, whatever you decide. All right then, Jonathan told him. We will cross over and let them see us. And if they say to us, stay where you are or we'll kill you, then we'll stop and not go up to them. It's kind of letting God decide whether this is just a really foolish thing or not. He's saying, well, God, if they say to just stay there, then we'll take it from God that, okay, we won't go any further. But if they say, come up and fight, then we will go up. And that will be the Lord's sign that he will help us defeat them. And when the Philistines saw them coming, they shouted, look, the Hebrews are crawling out of their holes. And then the men from the outpost shouted to Jonathan, come on up here and we'll teach you a lesson. Come on, climb up behind me, Jonathan said to his armor, for the Lord will help us defeat them. So they climbed up using both hands and feet, and the Philistines fell before Jonathan. And his armor bearer killed those who came behind them. They killed some 20 men in all, and their bodies were scattered over half an acre. Can you picture that? The guts and the courage of Jonathan and his armor bearer. Just two of them, and they take out 20 heavily armed Philistine soldiers. Over half an acre. Like that's impressive. But really, Jonathan, haven't you noticed that you can't even count the amount of warriors? Like really, what are you going to do now? Are you going to just keep going? You know, I don't know, 20,000 soldiers perhaps with two men? Like really, what are you thinking? But he is thinking, not natural mind, not natural world. He's thinking the power of God. He's got an inkling that God's on their team. He knows that God will help them fight. So he's not going to put up with these, he calls them pagan warriors. No. That they are not. They have no right to take that. Some of us need that kind of attitude in our world. Some of us, when we face these things, we kind of get pushed back by them. But we need the spirit of Jonathan that says, I don't care how big the opposition is or how bad it looks or what's going to happen. I know that God is with me, so therefore I'm going over. And I'm going to start a fight because I know that God is on my team. That's the guts that I love about Jonathan. Suddenly, panic broke out in the Philistine army, both in the camp and in the field, including the outposts and the raiding party. So even not just the people who are close by, but all over the border, panic strikes because two men have dared to cross over. And just then an earthquake struck and everyone was terrified. So not only are they panicking, but now the whole shaking land is pushing them and they're going, what's happening? What's happening? Saul's lookouts in Gibeah of Benjamin saw a strange sight. Remember they're hiding under a pomegranate tree, which are prickly, by the way. The vast army of Philistines began to melt away in every direction. Can you imagine that? They're standing up.
Yeah.
Hot up here. They're looking out over there. And they see 20,000 warriors melt into the distance. They see this panic. They see it stricken. And they start to think, maybe God's on the move. So what do? They join them. Verse 20, Saul and all his men rushed out to the battle and found the Philistines killing each other. Like, who needs an army when you can just turn an army on itself? Suddenly the enemy is starting to fight the enemy of its own accord. And there was terrible confusion everywhere. Even the Hebrews who had previously gone over to the Philistine army revolted and joined with Saul, Jonathan, and the rest of the Israelites. Likewise, the men of Israel who were hiding in the hill country of Ephraim joined the chase when they saw the Philistines running away. Can you picture that? They're still in caves. They're still underground. And they peek up and they see this. And they think, all right, it's on. And they grab whatever they can. So the Lord saved Israel that day. And the battle continued to rage even beyond Beth Avon. Who saved the day? The Lord saved the day. It wasn't Jonathan or his armor bearer. They were the catalysts that caused God to move. It's not because of their skill or their intellect or their courage even. It's just because they believed God. And God did it. Don't we need that? He overcame impossible odds. He didn't lie down in defeat, but chose to believe that God could act and save by many or by few. I reckon people in our world need that kind of courage. I've got friends who are facing all kinds of obstacles and pressures in life. I've got relatives who just are overwhelmed by stuff of life. I reckon if they knew that God was on their side and could move ahead of them and open doors for them and empower them, wouldn't that be amazing? Like, wouldn't that be something worth telling them? Saying, hey, God is an overcomer. God can help you get through the biggest challenges. You're going to make it. And as you do it, you'll realize that there's more in you than you thought. And suddenly, the world is shifting. It's optimistic. It's positive. It's courageous. It's not backward or shrinking. 1 John 5 puts it this way. He says, for whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that's overcome the world, our faith. Who is the one who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? See, you and I can overcome the world because we've got the faith of Christ inside of us. You and I don't need to lie down and be defeated by the enemy's schemes or by the blockages in your world. You don't need to have these things push you around. You push them around. They're not going to go away. But you're going to learn. And each time you do that, challenge probably gets higher, you know? And you learn how to high jump. You learn how to face bigger obstacles. And you go, oh, that's not a problem. That's a problem. That's my story. My testimony is that God, when I first met Jesus, I needed help to overcome the things that were in my world. Insecurities, fear, anxieties. That sense that I couldn't really do what I knew God wanted me to do. I couldn't live the life that God wanted me to live on my own. But when I invited Christ into my heart, I found this extra strength to face my world, to leap over those problems, to face the obstacles, to live a pure life, to put aside things that I knew were damaging me. But I didn't have the strength on my own to get rid of them. I needed help to overcome. And I found that Christ inside of me helped me face those things. And it just went on from there. Like, whether it's financial battles or impossibilities, God says, you know, buy this house. And I go, I don't have any money. Step out and see what happens. And bought a house. You know, whether it's things like that or whether it's just start a church or start Lithgow. I mean, that's impossible. What are you thinking, Avalon? I mean, it's ridiculous. Who can just walk into a town and start a church and believe and dare to believe that we can change the city? I mean, that's audacious. I like that thinking. We need more of it, don't we? Like, let's not just think small. Let's think big. Let's move beyond the limitations and the things that confront us. We think, well, I could never do that because that thing's too big. Pick it. I won't. That's my story. That's my testimony, is that Jesus helped me to overcome things in my life. This is the message. Through God, we shall do valiantly. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change and though the mountains slip into the sea. Psalm 46. That I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Philippians 4:13. The Old Testament, New Testament, the secret to life is having Jesus inside of you, helping you overcome things, helping you power, helping you faith. What's your story? What has Jesus helped you to overcome? What could you tell somebody 10 seconds, 20 seconds? I was like this, and I met Christ, and I found that I had the strength to say no to that. It could be really simple in a very Australian, normal way. Let's not be weird when we're talking to our friends and family about Christ. Let's just be honest about it. Hey, you should hear about Christ. Why do you go to church? Isn't that for old people? Isn't that for, you know, religious folk? Isn't that for people who need a crutch? You know, you've heard it all. Why do you go to church? Why do you bother? Why are you a God botherer? Don't you love that term? I'd rather bother God than other people. God likes being bothered, I found. He said, actually, Jesus is a real help to me in time of trouble. Actually, Jesus gives me so much life that I can wake up in the morning and thank you, God, for another day, despite the things that are in my path that day. Because that's what our world needs. But how will I know if we don't tell it? How will I hear unless we preach? That's why this month is all about. What's it all about? Because it's going to help us to connect our friends and our family. And that's why I'd love you to pray and fast with me for just five people. Just think of them. Who's in your world? Relatives, workmates, schoolmates, neighbors. In your world, are there five people in the city who could really use a touch of God? Wouldn't that be awesome to see them on a journey, be revived, to be restored, and then released as they really are meant to be? So we've got to learn to share this story and to help people overcome things in their world.
Thanks for listening. We would love to connect with you. Our services are on Sundays at 217 Howick Street at 10 a.m. for a 10:30 service. Or visit us on the web at c3churchbathurst.org.
Come like a river, come like a flood. Let us be overwhelmed, baptized in your love.